Welcome to Diversity Connects Us. This podcast highlights lived experiences and inspirational stories of strength and tenacity. We will share profound and courageous dialogues that influence diversity, equity, and inclusion by breaking the barriers and labels of stereotypes, confronting biases, and offering best practices to achieve a more significant, cultural, and emotionally intelligent mindset. And thank you again for joining us today. I have a request. If you value our show and view us at a safe space to share your stories, please do me a favor. Go to Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts, search for Diversity Connects Us, and share your review and feedback. This keeps our audience engaged. Also, I get to see what topics you enjoy and create more of that for you. I have something else for you to support my work. I want you to go to Amazon. I have written two ebooks, Emotional Intelligence, a Toolkit for Managing Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And the second one is called Know Yourself to Know Your Employees. Please leave a review. It will only cost you a cup of coffee. Today, we have a thought-provoking leader in her own right, Senator Genevieve Whittaker. She unwraps why decolonizing your curriculum is imperative. My name is Rochelle Carrier, and I'm an EQ coach and authoress. I help develop inclusive workspaces through an emotionally intelligent lens. This helps boost inclusivity and create a harmonious workplace environment. EQ is the bridge to DEI. To reach me, you can find me on LinkedIn or at hello@seqconsulting.co. Senator Genevieve Whittaker, please introduce yourself in your own way. Thank you so much for coming today.
Greetings, Rochelle, and greetings to all of those who are participating today in this awesome show. It is a real pleasure and honor to be here. I am Genevieve Whittaker. I am a former senator from the Virgin Islands, born and raised on the island of St. Croix. And by way of background, I am a human rights activist, I'm a lawyer, I'm a mother, I have a 14-year-old son. And as I always share, I'm really committed to the matters surrounding the curriculum. I'm an expert within the United Nations system and other systems in terms of addressing the issues surrounding matters of human rights. And I'm just excited to be here. Thank you so much, Rochelle, for sharing this space. And I'm excited about today's show.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you. You know, let's jump right in. What does it mean to you to decolonize a curriculum? What would that look like?
You know, and so great question. And I think even before we dive into when we say use the term decolonize, it's really understanding colonialism. So when we say decolonize, we're speaking about the matter of colonialism. And one of the things that through my research and through my efforts has been diving into what is really, how do you summarize it? And it can be summarized in so many facets. One way to look at it, and one way that I've shared through my project, which I'll speak about a bit later, one of my curriculum projects, is that what we know for a fact is that the matter of the teaching of history of colonialism is the void from the US, the American curriculum. And there are a series of teachings that lend itself in favor of the colonizer. You know, in this particular case, as we look at enslavement, where when you look through the textbooks and the stories, it is told from the perspective of those who colonized, those who dehumanized many of our ancestors. And the texts really don't speak well to how, in many instances, these our ancestors fought against the situation, fought against enslavement. And it teaches what is really understood as just white supremacy. And so that is all throughout the curriculum. We face the same in the Virgin Islands as being part of the United States, where our texts favor the colonizer. And what that would look like, a decolonized curriculum, when we speak about decolonization, we speak about empowering the people from even very young. And that would be curriculum that involves the teaching of one's culture, their heritage, who you are, your identification. I give an example through many of my works and research and efforts that there have been certain governments that have, for example, I know there was a project in the United Kingdom where preschoolers were, as part of a project, part of their learning about who they are and their identity was to create and speak about their family trees and come to present it in school and really identifying. And I think that's also where we've fallen short through identification of who we are. We then speak about it from an economic and political space. So decolonized curriculum would be curriculum that would lead us in the care of economic development, true careers and skill development that would lead to successful citizens. And what we see when we have colonialism and a colonial system in favor of the colonizer, persons are oppressed and they're oppressed through their education system. Not only are they not learning about who they are, but they're not learning skills necessary to be most effective in their respective communities.
Right. I have a few questions, but first, I think what's also happening, like you said earlier, there's a disjoint. Because I know my daughter is attending a French school here in South Florida, and she was coming home with books. They were import all their books from France. And I found it very interesting when I was reading the book with her, we'd go through the pages and all the chapters. We are still represented as living in huts, and the oppressor or the colonizer is fully clothed, has suitcases, traveling, and then he travels to Egypt. He travels to parts of Africa where we're all shown in not so favorable circumstances. And when I realized that this was happening, it was very difficult for her to start believing me when I started sharing, and she's only 8. And I realized this last year when I started sharing our Haitian heritage or African, you know, heritage, I started sharing information with her, and she was butting heads with me, telling me that, no, it's not true, that, you know, this is what she's learning at school. So I think, like you said, from an early age, and I'm happy I saw it at this time, that it's really important, even though there's a lot of pushback in a lot of ways, and, you know, in also many ways, lack of representation, that we as parents, because you're a parent as well, that we do our homework and get outside of the bubble and start decolonizing our own brains and our children's brains by sharing all this other outside knowledge that we can impart to them.
And that's what we have to do. I have my own example with my own son when he was in the second or third grade, and he brought home the workbook that I had not seen all school year that was just used in school. Where in the case of the Virgin Islands history, which I do, you know, one of the things that I just want to emphasize too, as part of this journey, I have been involved in a lawsuit mandating that the children learn Virgin Islands and Caribbean history, because I turned 40 this past Saturday. A law passed back in 1983 mandated that, but we see within the 40 years up till now, this, you know, Department of Education not properly implementing the law, that he brought home the workbook, and which was a result really of this lawsuit that we as advocates pushed for the Department of Education to implement the law. Workbooks soon emerged, and one of the workbooks for him and his other children, where they were told that, because for example, St. Croix was under 7 flags, Danes being the last flag, that these various colonizers just had the individuals just working on fields, and they were nicely clad and everything, and then said, just the only the Danes really were responsible for bringing them on ships. And then at the end of the chapter, asking the students and saying, you know, who was responsible for freeing? Because on July 3rd of 1848, we in fact took it upon ourselves, then the initial students took it upon themselves to free themselves. But then in this workbook, the children are being asked, Governor Bunchold, and he was missing him first. You know, how did he help with emancipation? And even to that, not leading with the fact that they were enslaved ancestors leading the charge to free themselves, and then kind of create the picture that the enslaved were working just fine and it was just a regular work day. And I even had the opportunity to go to Denmark during a ceremony where there was 2 artists who put together a statue to commemorate another act in our history, which took place in 1878, where a woman by the name of Mary Thomas, well, Queen Mary, joined with other women and also men to address post-slavery colonialism. And essentially, I got during that time where I got to speak at the ceremony unveiling the statue, I was able to go to the Danish Museum. And in the Danish Museum, they basically had a display, they set up a display regarding Virgin Islands history, where they said, oh, on Sundays, Danish West Indian slaves, they just were able to do what they needed to do on Sunday, and then they went back to work again the next week. So misinforming the Danish people, and certainly misinforming the Virgin Islands youth. And that's just one of a number of examples we have. And so to that point, we have to, yes, teach outside and share with our children and the community. We have to go outside that. And that was really the impetus for my project that I created under my youth organization.
Right. And do you think it's essential to have, you know, representation in all areas of our education system? I see it where my daughter goes to school. There's little sprinkles of representation, but I don't feel like it's enough. And, you know, as a former teacher of 25 years, I can count on the number on my hand from, you know, even from Montreal, where I was raised for 35 years, that there was nobody that looked like me ever. And I think that was unlearning or a deprogramming that I had to do on my own to figure out who I was and what I stood for myself or behalf of my country or, you know, or Black people in general. And I think this is what also is hurting a lot of our children.
It is, and that internalized oppression, because we're internalizing dehumanization, because we're being dehumanized. Because you're not seen as a human, it's that there's a superior race over your own, and that's what we're made to believe in. And so one of the impetus I had, and so back in 2009, I co-founded and I'm the president of the Virgin Islands Youth Advocacy Coalition. And through that process, the mission of the organization, really, especially in most focus on our Virgin Islands youth, is getting them civically involved and aware, but also aware and understanding their role and how they can fight and address the issue of colonialism. As not only do we struggle here with, just like you said, representation, I mean, we're a majority Afro-descendant community, yet and still we look at the text and the curriculum. I do want to, though, during this show also to commend the fact that there is a movement up front, that the current administration, Department of Education, because in the last legislature, I sponsored a measure to amend that 1983 law. And what I did essentially was to require that Virgin Islands and Basic Caribbean should be integrated. Because that's a good example. When we look at balance and we look at through integration, we're going to see a shift in the curriculum where there's not an overrepresentation of one or the other, but there's relativity. And children learn best when you make the topics relatable. How does understanding my identity relate to my success as a young person and become a successful adult? Why is colonialism so important? How is it tied to my quality of life? And there's direct correlations to that. But if we have works and curriculum that doesn't speak to that, we continue to perpetuate it, right? And we continue to see where, yes, and we've had successful, because I too was raised within the system, within colonialism. It's just that I had the type of, especially my grandmother, mostly raised with my grandmother, and with her from very young, being exposed to history and understanding who identity was huge. I grew up really understanding who I was as a child and was encouraged to pursue human rights and humanity. And so in my elementary years and so on, I was already into a lot. I knew about the Holocaust by the time I was 11, 12 years old. From a global perspective, on a local perspective, knowing the history of the Virgin Islands, and in the ninth grade, especially learning indigenous history from very young. So having a very global understanding as a young child, starting of course with my local understanding of who I was. And that speaks volumes, because here in the Virgin Islands, we've had a number of, even to this day, we're still alive. We have scholars, individuals, teachers who are going outside of the curriculum to deliver the teaching of Virgin Islands and Caribbean history. So we commend them. And now it's just about, with the legislation and the politics around it, ensuring that on a governmental holistic level, that we have it in the code and that the code is being followed and we push with the executive branch to ensure that it's implemented. So what funding would be required and how we could push this forward.
Push the agenda forward, absolutely.
Yeah. Also, one other point I just want to make is that the United Nations, as we know how it plays into, we have treaties and laws, right? And I just want to state that the U.S. has one of the few, you know, as many aware, the U.S. does not observe a lot of human rights treaties. In fact, in other words, they don't sign off on it, ratify very few. And the one covenant on elimination of all forms of racial discrimination was officially finally signed in 1994 with a bunch of what's known as reservations. But that does not stop the fact that the overall agreement of the U.S. government is to stave off and to address racism. Yet and still, we have Congress has not taken huge concerted actions. We look across the ethers. We look across all throughout the state on the local state level, on the congressional level. How much legislation do we see that supports addressing racism? Yes, we do. We have hate crimes legislation and all that, but the root cause, colonialism and how information is delivered. Because if we're teaching, we have works and texts where children are learning that another race is superior to theirs, that is a form of racism.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, then it's eventually internalized.
And we see that through the violence. We see the output of lack of identity, not knowing who you are. Then you fight among each other. When we go to the skill development, you know, the issues surrounding. So you don't see yourself within this curriculum. You don't see yourself. You just go through the motions and, you know, finish school and in some cases drop out and have no true opportunity to really properly participate and then pursue a life of crime.
Right. Absolutely. Why do you think that teachers and students of color are an asset to the education system?
Really, that goes back to who best to deliver it. Ultimately, you're going to have everyone of every color, of every ethnicity, being able to teach under curriculums that are relevant, that take into account humanity. And that would also mean, yes, we would need more teachers of color. And I give a good example here in the Virgin Islands, all right, where we have, for example, a lot of, because of our shortage of teachers, we've had persons come in from the Philippines to teach the students of the Virgin Islands. And there are challenges within that, right? And those challenges being now, are we properly educating whether the Filipinos or whomever comes to the Virgin Islands in the history? So as they deliver the content, and that's why integration is so important. As they're delivering the content, they themselves being trained and learning the culture. And culture is not just about our celebrations, which we just had Carnival, to Thomas. It's not just the music, which is, it's part of it. But that true, actual curriculum where we start to tear down and start to really teach from perspective of, you know, we're part of a human race. This is our story. We struggle, continue to struggle. We demand rights, equal justice, access. And as Virgin Islanders, fighting those good fights because we have a series of fights, our right to vote for president. When it came to Obamacare, we weren't afforded the two options that the state was able to adopt both of the two main options. We were denied that. And there are a lot of other denials that take place. Even something as simple as just us shipping items to and from. And so when we have a decolonized curriculum, we're going to be able to have persons be the next persons who are going to advocate for rights, who are going to push, whether we have people in the state to run and they run for their respective state boards and become legislators. They're passing these same laws that either can contribute to decolonization or can continue to manifest and continue to have these manifestations of teachings of, or in support the status quo or the continued perpetuation of us teaching superiority based on race, and then that being the white race.
Right, of course. And to decolonize our system, you know, we must have an open dialogue like we are now about these racial ideas, thoughts, and biases. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts on the racial, having these open dialogues, it's critical. And again, I really thank you for having this program. And to have more of these, you know, to have, when we start to have, you know, our town halls, our engagements, speaking to policymakers in the space of education. And that's why In many ways, what we've decided as an organization, working with other organizations as part of the coalition. So the name of the project is called the CURES Project. I title it CURES, and it stands for the curriculum to uphold the right to education of our students. And I believe that for all students, not just, focuses largely on Virgin Islands youth, but also wider than that, also American youth in general. And because we are taught those biases through the curriculum, and we have to have that open dialogue. But as we know, Rochelle and those listening and watching, viewing, we know for a fact that there's efforts up front to push against implementation of decolonized curriculum. You know, we are in year 2023, but we are still challenged with implementing civil rights history into America's curriculum. And the average U.S. child would, you know, when I say stateside, those living outside the territories, those who live in the states, they, on average, don't know about the Virgin Islands, other than it's, island not too far from Puerto Rico, and that's about it. How many know that we don't have the right to vote? How many know that we have we've had congresspersons throughout the years who have not been afforded the right to vote in the full session? Who knows that how many Virgin Islands have lost their lives through several wars, all the wars since we became part of the United States in 1917? And so that's not a full understanding. It's been hidden. And so when we look at the Congress, that's why, how many congressional, other than our congressperson and other territorial delegates, championing issues surrounding territorial issues, we don't have a stake in that. But if constituents are holding the members of Congress accountable to what's happening anywhere in the country we live in, we would see changes, because a lot of them are only motivated sometimes, a lot of times only by what the constituents or how this is going to affect their ability to get back into office. And that's a sad reality there, because you should really, as our Congress really needs to observe this stance that the U.S. made back in 1994 on a treaty level, that our laws need to drastically change, our federal laws need to drastically change. The insular cases, those are the cases that peg us as we are basically an alien race, as indicated by the opinion of the justice and all of that. The Virgin Islands is under the Committee on Natural Resources, in the U.S. House of Representatives. What does that say? We're natural resources. So even how we're deemed, how we're treated, how our affairs are handled is all a matter of colonialism. And to decolonize will be, and the importance of decolonizing the curriculum is the actual teaching and these dialogues as a method of teaching and exposing what is going on that's hidden from the texts, and that huge efforts are being made to wipe it out of the curriculum and to erase history.
Absolutely. They're rewriting history. And where are you now and what are you doing now? Let the audience know what it is. What are you cooking up if you want to share with us?
Well, finished my term, I dove back into my youth organization. As I shared before, as president and co-founder of the Virgin Islands Youth Advocacy Coalition, and really reaching out to Virgin Islands young people. I'm really intentional about including all Virgin Islanders, but that's also a challenge we face when we talk about colonialism. We'd even divide ourselves among the island itself, even around the islands. So bringing together youth. And what we're working on, and first off, I'm very big about strategy. So we've spent some time just meeting, getting to know each other, some of the newer members. And what we're charting out now is a lot of efforts on twofold. One is specifically on the matter of addressing curriculum is the CURES Project. And I would encourage those listening, you can go on to Facebook and do CURES, CURES, and it should pull up. We also have our website, which we have relaunched, which is viayouth.org. And on Facebook, it's Virgin Islands Youth Advocacy Coalition. And of course, we'll share that as we conclude this interview. But that we're now saying, when it comes to curriculum, we're going to be directly engaging our education stakeholders, really working with our Department of Education, the Board of Education, the governor, lieutenant governor, in going into the classrooms, which I've done a lot of those engagements already. I've been in many classrooms throughout the years, even during my reparations movement days until this day. And us charting it, what are we doing now is also in working with the curriculum division within the Department of Education to share various resources. We have an office that deals directly with culture education, a division within the Department of Education that's doing a lot of great work is coming through that department. So working with them, putting works together. We have a lot of local authors who've written incredible works over the years and some younger authors, and collecting those works. And we begin to decolonize creative ways of the children learning through theater, through art, through the use of animation and excitement, because we have to build excitement around the topic. You know, we have to bring people into it. When I had an opportunity through the fellowship I took part in, through the organization called Young People For, the initiative called Young People For through the People for the American Way, we had a conference in New Orleans, and we had a chance to visit one of the local artists, and he's using his warehouse and his platform to teach New Orleans, Louisiana history to the youth, and has developed a curriculum as part of his effort to address, and even as a good example of decolonizing, where you're using artistic works and making it relatable. Here locally, we have a lot of our artists doing different various works, different opportunities to teach the children who they are. And on the other side, we're looking at and addressing youth leadership, because one of the things in order for us to move this needle forward, young people are going to be motivated by the works of other young people. You know, folks getting older, as we get older, but knowing that generation to generation, we have intergenerational efforts. We hear from our elders and learn from our elders, the same to say about the younger. But peer-to-peer engagement is the most powerful in the context of taking action steps and being motivated. When you see your fellow young person excited about the topic, ready, whether they are participated in pushing this forward. So we are working on one which is known as the Commission on Youth. And it's the Youth Commission that when our government was most, had an actual full commission going, those young people were the ones in politics. They were also involved in economics because they're looking to get jobs and being entrepreneurial and stuff like that. And working with the current governor, which I did in the last legislature, I was responsible for amending the legislation to really help to move and fund, actually. So the first time it's been funded in many years, it was repealed. We had senators and a governor signing off on that in the late 80s that said, let's do away with this youth commission. And I thank Senator Jeanette Mellon Young, who in 2012 brought it back. And like I say, we always stand on the shoulder of others. Another fellow woman leader in our community and as former senator, and bringing it forward. So hopefully we will have to see some movement this year with Governor Albert Bryan with moving the commission forward with the legislature. And also we have a youth council, a youth senate, which is a newer entity, and working again to seeing that youth council, which is known as the Legislative Youth Advisory Council, that council is stood up. But I will tell you something about, back to, specifically on the topic of decolonizing the curriculum, that a lot of the challenges we face with empowering our youth is also a part of colonialism.
Absolutely.
Because that colonial mindset, when you break free of it, you're going to have policymakers and individuals jumping at the opportunity for young people to participate. When you see this manner, it's a power and control. And that's what systemic internalized oppression creates, where you feel now you're in this position of power. Don't want to hear from the young people. That's also how we don't empower our young people, because of that mindset and that control and power.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what do you want our audience to part with? What would be your parting words for us today before we reach the top of the Diversity Connects Us Hour?
Well, in parting, I want to really share with those who are listening, take some time for those who have, children right in school right now, and look at the social studies curriculum, and just take some time. Even you can this week, as school is different schedules, but some schools are set to close soon, and others, and really examine, see what you can do as a parent. We have PTAs throughout the country, what you can do, engage, and find out what your child is learning. The other item is around the politics and around making decisions about who to serve on your board of education, who are elected and so on. Be really intentional and start to raise the matter surrounding the curriculum that your child has been exposed to. And those who are right now in states where their legislators are, in fact, crafting legislation to do away with the governors or pushing against it, develop your own system. Consider starting your own organization, as we've always encouraged. We started mine in terms of the Youth Advocacy Coalition, and do that work yourself and build that capacity. And there's so much research, Rochelle and listeners, it's a tremendous amount of topics and research. And there's one quote I wanted to share too in closing. And this individual, his name is Franz Fanon. Rochelle, his works quite well, and you those who follow him. And Franz Fanon, he once said, that colonialism is not satisfied merely with holding a people in its grip and emptying the native's brain of all form and content by a kind of perverted logic. It turns to the oppressed people and distorts, disfigures, and destroys it. So what that message is, we know it's going to happen. There's always going to be that energy of the colonizer fighting to keep the system in place, to keep those oppressed. We then have to continue to champion our efforts, use various mediums to share and to inspire and to work with one another and to collaborate. And I'm very excited about the next movements, to have a great team of individuals, young people, to see one day in the Virgin Islands that we have a decolonized curriculum, to see one day the entire United States where the curriculum is really speaking to the people of the United States, the humanity, the difficult stories of oppression, and how we cannot ever repeat the past, and how we can have fairness and justice and unity going forward.
For all, absolutely. Yes. What a great conversation. How would you want people to get in touch with you?
So in terms of my information, I would encourage a few websites, and also you can find me in a few places. One of my main websites is GenevieveWhitaker.com. So that's GenevieveWhitaker.com. I encourage you to subscribe to my website. For my youth organization, we have the Virgin Islands Youth Advocacy Coalition Facebook page. We're on everything, pretty much Facebook, our website, viyouth.org. And I look forward to reaching out and just sharing. You find me, Genevieve Whitaker, on Facebook. I'm on all the platforms too. Even my son, Snapchat is the latest thing that I'm not as active on, but my son gets me on there. But pretty much you can find me on those platforms. And thank you again, Rochelle, for this opportunity. And thank you all for tuning in.
Absolutely. What a blessing to have you on the show. Before we go, Dr. Lulu Hanshard Palmer, he says, yes. Great talk. Keep our children's education historically accurate.
Yes. And thank you, Dr. Lulu at the Parmo. And I definitely want to shout out to her too on a national level for including me, Dr. Lulu, for the organization Vision Forward. I'm very excited to share that too next time we do a sequel. So thank you so much for tuning in, Dr. Lulu, and all those who tune in, and my fellow Virgin Islanders.
Oh, thank you so much. We'll definitely do a part two. It was such a pleasure having you.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Have a good one.
As we reach the top of the Diversity Connects Us Hour, I want to thank all of my listeners for tuning in. My name is Rochelle Carrier, and I'm a DEI personal consultant and EQ coach and authoress of 2 ebooks. Emotional Intelligence, a Toolkit for Managing Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, and Know Yourself to Know Your Employees. The link to purchase the ebooks are in the show notes. Also, be on the lookout for my and Dr. Rudell's coaching workshops, presentations, and webinars. I also want to thank my producer, Titan32. That's his tag name on Fiverr.com. He does our beautiful edits. To trend with us, #DiversityConnectsUs.